She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember, we don't tell you what to think, but we certainly want you to. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of the Chapman Automotive Group. Thank you, Chapman, for doing your share and showing that you care about our community and about the planet. So everybody, just take a deep breath, relax, and get ready to hear one amazing story. The topic of our show is making food personal again. Our guest is Nikhil Arora, co-founder of Back to the Roots. Since graduating from UC Berkeley in 2009, he and co-founder Alejandro Velez have created two award-winning products since 2009, underline, hashtag, underscore, the Mushroom Kit and Aqua Farm, that are sold in over 2,500 retailers nationwide. And are you ready for this? Since co-founding Back to the Roots a little over 5 years ago, Nikhil has been named one of Business Week's top 25 entrepreneurs under 25, Inc.'s 30 under 30, and CNN's 10 next entrepreneurs to watch. And believe me, the list goes on. So, Nikhil, and I hope I'm saying your name right, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And I'm sure you've told the story many times over, but like I said off air, let's have some fun and start sharing the amazing story. I thought I'd just use a little pun and say, let's go back to the roots and tell us how you and your partner went from a business ethics class to one of the fastest growing companies in the United States. What happened in that ethics class?
Yeah, it was pretty random. It was our last semester in college, and you know, Alex and I are both in this class, and we're in the same class for 4 years, and somehow one of those kids, he somehow don't connect with, and you know, it's about 3 months away from graduation. We both kind of thought we knew what we were doing, and you know, we're both going down that corporate route. I was going to go into consulting. Alex had a job offer, you know, they're going to investment banking, and here we are in this 150-person lecture. And we hear our professor bring up this random fact that you could possibly grow mushrooms on recycled coffee grounds. And something with that one sentence, that one fact, inspired the both of us. We both reached out separately to him for more information. And he was like, honestly, yeah, I have no idea where I even read it, but this other kid, you know, he asked him about it too. Why didn't you guys link up? And that's how we first met. And that's how we got started.
I mean, it's so random, but it's so on purpose, because look at what you've created. It's like there are no coincidences. And I'm always curious. I've started several companies myself. How did you come up with Back to the Roots as a name? It really grabs everyone. It's compelling. But how did you decide that? What happened in the wee hours at the fraternity house or wherever you were?
Yeah, you know, the company is funny. It started off being called Funny Story and Branding, Better Ventures, BPTR Ventures. And we thought it was brilliant because, you know, it's acronym of BTTR, like better mushrooms, better this, better that, but it stands for Back to the Roots, so there's really cool meaning to it. And started a company with that. Our Twitter handle is still at the BTTR Ventures. But, you know, as we launched our first mushroom kit, we had our first design, you know, it was a big thing, better mushroom kit. And all we just put in our first box, one of 10 or 15,000 boxes. And right away, within the first few weeks, you start getting all these questions of people asking us, hey, what's a bitter mushroom kit? What's a butter mushroom? We're like, oh my goodness, totally dropped that ball, you know, and ended up having to just kind of decided to drop the acronym and then rebrand it. And you know what? Let's call it what it is, Back to the Roots.
But then there's this kit, and if any, you know, people will, of course, go online and Google it and look at it and see this really cool kit. Tell us first about the mushroom kit. I mean, it's a really, I don't want to say cool design because that probably dates me, but it's really, it grabs you. You look at it and you say, what the heck is this? I mean, the packaging, the size of it, everything. How did that all come about? I mean, that didn't just happen sitting there with coffee grounds and mushrooms.
No, it that's been an evolution and a journey in design, to say the least. You know, we our first mushroom kit was a big, bulky, kind of clear bag of fungus, like a basketball-sized kind of bag that we thought would look gorgeous because we slapped some stickers on it from FedEx, you know, and had taken that to our Whole Foods buyer, the first pitch of, you know, this mushroom kit idea, and we pull it out like it's the next iPhone. We're so proud of it. And his first reaction is like, and we put the thing on the table and like, oh my God, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. Get that out of my face. And just literally gave us a good kick in the butt to go and learn about design. Like, go back to your R&D team and figure it out. And, you know, at that time, we just, Alex and I, you know, I worked out of a coffee shop. So we went back and there was a long road and long journey of learning the power of design. But now it's become one of the cornerstones for our brand. Something we value so highly, just the power of good design to make our products more accessible.
And it says in the research, and I hate it when I get any facts wrong because I research to a fairly well and want to be accurate on the show, but from a couple of articles I read, it said you started using 1 million pounds of recycled coffee grounds. And I'm wondering, over what period of time was that and where did you put it?
That was in our first, that was in 2011, our second full year in business.
Okay.
We did 1 million pounds of coffee grounds. And we partnered up with out here in California, a cafe chain called Pete's Coffee. I'm sure
right.
A lot of people are familiar with it. Awesome. You know, chain of coffee shops, and it's really mission aligned and we know what we're doing and forged a really cool partnership with them. So we were collecting all their coffee grounds from all their Northern California cafes, which is a really exciting partnership.
And that kind of, that's a great story because you were helping in the beginning. There's a background noise. There sounds like there's a party going on and I want to be there.
You said to have fun. We're always having fun here. So
that's good. It's what makes Mrs. Green's world real. I tell everybody, this is not NPR. We have fun on our show. So
yeah.
Pete's Coffee Ground, Pete's is huge in California, but you were taking care of one of their problems. And I want to talk about that later in the show. They had this massive amount of coffee grounds, used coffee grounds, that were a mess that they had to pay waste management to take away. Right?
That's correct, yeah. And that's part of like the beauty, I think, of this whole lesson we've learned is that the power of in waste almost. You know, we're getting paid to collect their coffee grounds. We replace waste management because in a way we're doing a service for it. We're their VIP waste collectors going in there every morning at 6, 7 a.m. collecting their coffee ground waste. So we replace waste managers. We're getting paid to collect. And then, you know, we would grow the mushrooms on the coffee ground, sell the mushrooms, and then our own waste, the leftover spent, you know, called mushroom substrate, the leftover coffee grounds mixed with the mushroom roots, becomes an incredible soil amendment. And so we were selling that soil amendment then to Home Depot and Whole Foods and different nurseries. So all of a sudden you take what was a waste stream and you start looking at it differently and realize that there's value in the waste of the waste, and the waste of the waste of the waste. And it's just, it starts making you rethink our whole economy works, you know, and we throw away so much stuff.
We're taking away the whole concept, believe me. There's another person I interviewed. They have a company called Whole Vines, and the owner is actually Kendall Jackson of the company. Sure. And they wanted to do the right thing and compost. But if you're Kendall Jackson, you sell a lot of wine. So their composting became a problem, and that's how they ended up starting another company called Whole Vine, which actually uses the seeds and the grape skins. I mean, it's a very similar story to make cookies, you know, flour and grape seed oil. So it's quite a compelling story. But let's talk a little bit about on that journey, because there's a lot about the corporate culture that stands out in your story. The having fun part is a given. Everything I looked at that you guys do, you're having fun. But collecting the waste, you learned things along the way from people that were in the community, like the local farmers and other people that were growing, about what to do with waste. And in one of the, maybe it was a YouTube video, you learned about testing and packaging and certification. Can you share a couple of stories with us about that? How, I call it really organic growth in its truest form. You were learning from other prospective partners.
Yeah, Sycamore, I think it's a big part of even how we've grown the company. It's been, we know we're not experts at grown mushrooms or, in the second part of aquaponics, and we'll work on the future. We're not experts at that, but I think we realized that where innovation happens and growth happens is just getting people together from different backgrounds and perspectives. With the mushroom kits, we're learning from our coffee suppliers and our retailers and our customers and the guys when we put up our waste, our spent substrate on Craigslist. We had no clue that it was a good swim, and then all of a sudden we had all these people coming by to pick up what we thought was trash and we thought was waste, and all of a sudden they're giving us lessons, in gardening and urban gardening and how valuable spent mushroom substrate is to the soil amendment. And all of a sudden you put together these four or five different parties and stakeholders, and you start realizing that there's something going on here. So I think, and you put all those people in the same room and magic starts happening, so to speak. So it's just been something we really get, again, talk about the cornerstones for our company now. We talk about design as one, and I think two is just the really trying to go deep with our partners and realizing that we don't know the answers, but if we can ask the right questions and get the right people in the room, we can make things happen.
Well, nowhere in the research that I did it say, and I really thought about should I ask you this question or not, but you're both on this path in the financial world, consulting, investment banking, going on from UC Berkeley to probably high-paying jobs. What did your family say when you said we're going to grow mushrooms with recycled coffee grounds? How did that work?
Yeah, they were we've been really fortunate. Our family has been really supportive. Alex's stepdad is still, an operations manager on our team and has been with us for 5 years, and really grateful for our family support. But, they've been there since the beginning when we first said, hey, we heard this random fact. They've seen the whole evolution. But, definitely some of our friends in college were like, we thought we were nuts. Here we are last semester. I clearly remember some Friday nights, last semester in college, where friends are going out and they're like, what are you guys doing? And here we are, like, lugging back black trash bags of coffee grounds. Like, what's going on? It's just the people look at some of the funniest conversations and just looks at people's faces, walking back home at 9 p.m. with a trash bag full of coffee grounds and your friends are walking in the direction going out at night. It's just, it was a pretty hilarious last couple of months.
And how do you, tell us how the package works. This is when I wish I had audio and visual. So the package is like a rectangular shape and the mushrooms grow out of the front. But tell us how it actually works and how many mushrooms do you get out of one of the packages, the mushroom kits?
Yeah, so you can get a couple crops out of each box, over a pound of mushrooms. And the way it works itself is you close the little box and you just pop open the front panel and you mist inside the box is the mushroom substrate or the roots that are already ready to grow. We've incubated them for a few weeks, so they're ready to grow. They're in a sealed bag, so they're dormant. And when you open that front panel up and you slip that bag open, that fresh air and the little bit of water you add to it just kickstarts the mushroom. So literally within 10 days, right out of the box, you can, get this gorgeous, beautiful, big crop of organic oyster mushrooms. And 10 days later, just twist them off and throw them in some pasta or saute them or on pizzas. You can kind of get creative, but they're as fresh as it gets in 10 days. You can grow your own food on your kitchen tabletop.
And it has such a family appeal to me because I remember when my kids were little, even taking an avocado seed and putting it in water, kids love to watch things grow. So I'm sure there's an appeal for parents and kids to see this magic happen in not a very long amount of time. So once you open the panel, how long does it take for the mushrooms to start showing up?
They start showing up in about 7 days, 6-7 days. But then once they pop out, they're literally doubling in size every single day. So from day 7 to day 10, it's doubling in size, and then you're ready to harvest on day 10.
Okay, so I want to know what happened when this is everybody's dream who's ever been in retail. Whole Foods. Like I have, we have really dear friends that have a company called Isabella's Ice Cream, and we were all sitting on, you know, our hands just waiting to see what would happen. And they have now been picked up by Whole Foods. But tell us a little bit about that journey, because that was really your first big, you hit pay dirt with the first go round. Isn't that fair to say?
I know it wasn't that easy,
but I mean, you got Whole Foods within a very short time. Some people try for years and years and never get in it.
Yeah, you know, Whole Foods is a, it's been an amazing account, amazing partner for us. So it's been a lot of, you know, a lot of work. And we started off just literally taking a paint bucket of mushrooms that we had grown in our fraternity kitchen and walked it in to our local Berkeley Whole Foods, you know, and then just walked right in and talked to the first guy we saw in the produce department and got them excited when one store at a time, store by store, until we proved success in Northern California, and then took that regional success and were able to pitch national. But, you know, it's been built demo by demo, customer by customer, because you think about it, there's no demand for mushroom kits. No one's walking into a store looking for a mushroom kit. So, you know, we're trying to sell something no one actually wants. They had no idea what it is. So, you know, it was just all demo by demo, educating customers and store by store. But it's been really exciting to kind of see the energy and the feedback from the community, though, about it. You know, people, once they realize what it is, like, oh my God, you know, we got so much feedback and awesome just response from people, and it allowed us to grow really quickly because of, you know, we're getting such fun customer feedback, and they were telling their stories too. So it's been Whole Foods, and you know, since that we've went from Whole Foods, and the last couple of years have been able to expand it out to not just natural food stores, but even like Home Depot and Costco, and launched in Target last fall. So it's been really fun taking a little mushroom kit, you know, and that we could barely sell at a Berkeley farmers market to start because it looked so disgusting too. So something you can sell in like a Nordstrom or a Target, you know?
Yeah, so. One that stood out for me, and I had to listen to it twice, Toys R Us. It was like, what?
Yeah.
Because it is something that you want to get for your kids that's like a healthy, fun present that will actually be good for them. So that was a standout for me. And I love that Whole Foods lets the local buyers make decisions. I mean, every Whole Food market you go into in the United States, they have different kinds of produce because they have local buyers. They let their people at that level. I think it's a great model. So what about, I think it's a phenomenon of social media, because you attribute a lot of your success to Facebook and how things started going crazy. But again, to me, it goes back to your analysis concept of partnering. You were partnering with your community of consumers. So talk about how things went with Facebook.
Yeah, you know, Facebook has been an incredible force. I think it's, you know, video and photo, I think food is so naturally shared and visually, you know, so, you know, Twitter hasn't been the biggest thing for us. Like, I think it's very textual based, but Facebook and, you know, YouTube, and we have a time lapse of our mushroom kits growing. It's not even a very well done time lapse. It's not like the, you know, it's kind of shadowy and things like that, but it's a 3-day time lapse and it has 2 million views, over 2 million views on it. Just people sharing it and, you know, freaking out over it. It's pretty cool to see. And then Facebook, you know, I feel like Facebook in some ways is like a very fancy photo sharing site, you know, in a way. It's just perfect for it. So people love sharing photos of what they, you know, how often you see your friends sharing photos of their dinner meals, what they've cooked, what they've eaten. So food is something that's so naturally shareable, and that just taps in so great Facebook. So we just have, you know, we have a one-for-one campaign where anyone that posts a photo of their fully grown mushroom kit on our Facebook page will donate one to a classroom of their choice. So it's been an awesome, very organic way of growing a community that's really passionate about what we're doing.
Yeah. And it's really come on. It's like you see it go from 1 to 10,000 to 20,000 to 30,000 to 40,000. Okay, and we're going to believe it. I told you that the time would fly because we would have fun. So we're already up on our first break. So everybody, stay here with me. We've got lots more really fun stuff to share. I am having the pleasure of interviewing Nikhil Arora from Back to the Roots, started a company in 2009 with his partner, and you call him Alex, right? Alejandro.
Yeah, Tyler.
To create two award-winning products. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about social media. I'd love you to share the Patagonia story about giving back and some more about the aquaponics, how that came about. Everybody, please stay here with me. We'll be right back. There, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back, and it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Find everything you need for your next adventure at Bookman Sports Exchange. Buy it new, buy it used, or trade up and go where you've never been before. Explore this big backyard we call Tucson. Bookman Sports Exchange has the gear you need for anything from a quick day hike in Sabino to a long backpacking trip through the Grand Canyon. Bookman Sports Exchange, open daily, located on Speedway, east of Country Club. For details and more information, visit bookmansports.com.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And we always want us all to remember to have fun when you're thinking about things like this. I am interviewing Nikhil Arora, who is the co-founder of Back to the Roots. Their mission, I loved reading about their mission, is to create well-designed, fun, and sustainable products that inspire millennials and their kids to reconnect with food and ask the question, where does my food come from? So I have to go, since that's the write-up I wrote for the segue, did you have that vision once this started evolving and the people at Whole Foods said yes? Did you start getting a clear idea of how on purpose the mission was for healthy foods and healthy habits for families?
Yeah, you know, I think our mission's kind of evolved. We've learned more, to be honest with you. We came into this not knowing,
right?
You know, very much about food. We weren't foodies. We weren't, you know, our fancy thing we're eating were like $5 footlongs at Subway. So it's been a journey for us too. I think as we've learned more about food, our company's evolved too, and I think now it's a core part of our brand. We're not trying to create products and create a brand that's, you know, top down or telling you what's right or in this kind of gourmet land. It's more about food's fun. Food should be something you share with a family. So it's more about discovery than it is about education, you know, and because we're learning every day too, and we're just trying to create products that share, you know, just like we got excited about mushrooms, we want people to be excited about that same, to feel that same sense of excitement we got. So it's curiosity and, you know, discovery have become big parts of our brand.
And it's a perfect segue to the part I read about total transparency that you learn from Patagonia. I mean, they're like kind of the gold standard of retail, and they never, I don't think they throw anything in the garbage. But how did that start to open up a whole new world for you about total transparency? They don't hide anything.
They really don't, you know.
And, they really don't.
You know, there's one story that we really appreciated from them that inspired us, and it was this, you know, we read this kind of, you know, their recap and case study on it. It just was so exciting to us, where they had this campaign with it where they shared the good and the bad that goes into their jackets, and here are the chemicals that are safe and, you know, not harmful, and here are some of the chemicals that may be bad for the environment and may be harmful to us. We don't know yet, but they laid it out there straightforward and, you know, gave that full transparency. And they said, we're working on trying to do better at these things. But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, they're going to, you know, lose all these sales because they're scaring the customer's way of telling them what the bad stuff is. And at their flip side, it's just incredible response. Their sales, you know, increased tremendously. I think what it was, people were like, hey, at least they're telling us. So what are the folks who aren't telling us? What are they putting in their jackets, you know? And it was just such a cool inspiration to us. And we've taken that to heart now with our products and just being kind of really open about things. And, you know, the mushroom kits early on, they were growing in the craziest shapes and forms and sizes and scary, fun, funky, freaky shapes. And we, at first, we were trying to, like, hide that, and we didn't know how to best approach that. And eventually, we're like, you know what? Let's just be straightforward and have fun with it. And create this kind of, you know, name that mushroom campaign. We took our 12 most funky looking mushrooms that grew out of our kits and had people, you know, name them on Facebook and donated tons of kits to the people who had the most creative names, and just kind of embraced the fact that our kits weren't perfect early on. And it was so much fun to see and drove so much more sales and awareness. And, you know, to date now, it's become a full part of our brand. That's actually how we define sustainability. It's not about, you know, how many light bulbs have you saved or how much, you know, gas emissions have your trucks, you know, cut. I think sustainability in our minds is just about transparency. Like, just be open about everything, step one, and that will lead to everything else, because we believe that people want to buy some companies that are doing the right thing, and let's make companies be transparent about it. You know?
It's why I love the tagline for my own show. I mean, I'm not doing self-promotion, but we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I feel the same about GMO labeling. I might choose to buy food that have GMOs in it. Just tell me. Can't I please tell me, you know, what's in my food? And then chances are there's things that I would still buy, but I don't, the total transparency thing, I think, is a really huge secret of success. And I remember you quoting, or I read somewhere, because it becomes like one big mush to me, because I'm reading so much about some mother wrote to you and said her son or daughter loves the hunchback mushroom. I mean, that was one that I literally laughed out loud. It's like, this is really good. And kids eating mushrooms, that's really good too. What about the philosophy of, you know, I have so many questions, because there's the entrepreneur side of me that wants to ask you all about the corporate culture side, but then there's the consumer side of me that says, okay, the corporate culture question is, I so believe in making money and doing good. And would you say that that is one of your core values? I mean, making money is a good thing, and you can do really good things with that. So share with us what your philosophy is about that whole concept.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're a for-profit company, and it's something we're proud about. And we think it's, you know, if you want to grow and innovate, you need the resources to do that. And we don't think, you know, they're separate things. You can, you know, we 100% in our heart of hearts believe that, you know, you can make money and do good at the same time. And it comes down to, are the products you're selling, is every action you're taking, is how you're making your money, doing something good for the world and being in the right mindset. And you know, for us, the more we're making, that just means to us, the more people are connecting to their food, the more food people are growing themselves at home. And that's exciting to us. And, you know, it's been a crash course for us in business. But one thing we've kind of learned is that, you know, when we're early on trying to decide if we're for-profit or we go on the non-profit side, it was like, you know, if you're a non-profit, you still are selling something. You're selling yourselves in a way then, because you need money for other people who have made money through their for-profit. So some way or somehow you need capital to be able to innovate and launch new products and grow, whether it's through your own products or if you're leveraging money for people who made money through their own for-profit. So end of the day, you need capital, and we're like, it's not a bad thing.
No, if you don't make money, you go out of business.
Exactly.
And stepping back a minute into the, I call it the boots on the ground piece, you guys did actual demos in stores that got attention from different departments. Can you tell a little bit about that? Because to me, that's the human side of this, where you weren't sending your reps out. You guys were going, putting demos on in Whole Foods stores to get people excited about your products.
Yeah, and to this day still, that's how we grew our company, is through demos. And it was Alex and I first, and as we've grown, it's been, you know, our team was all young, passionate folks as well. But, you know, early on, it was we would collect coffee grounds early in the morning, 6, 7 a.m., plant the coffee grounds in the afternoon, harvest the mushrooms, and then, you know, by evening, we're out there in stores demoing them and making sure we can create buzz and create demand. So it's just this cycle where we just, you knee deep in every part of the business cycle. But, you know, by being able to get out there and build those relationships in stores, we were able to then go deeper as well, which has been really exciting. And I think Whole Foods, you know, we cross merchandise our mushroom kits in the bakery section, which is the cafe, you know, because the coffee grounds into
the whole gift body section.
And so gifts and toys, yeah, the produce, they sell the mushrooms. So it's just fun to, I think, we always said, let's go deeper with a few partners than spreading ourselves too thin with a lot, you know.
But how did you do things? Like, I know a lot about fulfillment, and I'm going back to our friends Isabella's Ice Cream. I mean, they're a phenomenon. They're going to be in the same place that you guys are. They're being picked up. And they started out with literally Crystal and Dominic making the ice cream. Crystal pretty much making the ice cream. And then all of a sudden, they want it in a Whole Foods that's, you know, 1,000 miles away, and it's ice cream. How are you guys keeping up with the fulfillment piece, packaging and shipping and making sure it all happened?
Yeah, you know, we realized that wasn't our core competency and our core strength. And we used to do it ourselves. We used to kind of ship everything out ourselves, and that didn't go too hot. You know,
that really would stunt your growth.
Yep, and it's, you know, we've gone through a few partners and trying to find the right people. But again, because I have to, the thing we've learned is just focus on what we're good at and do that really, really well. And everything that's not core to that is just find partners. So now we have an amazing, you know, fulfillment center we work with, designed something we weren't good at ourselves, Alex and I, but we had a huge appreciation for. So we work with an awesome set of designers, you know, from all parts of our, you know, accounting, to financing, to legal stuff. You know, we don't have our own legal department, things like that. We just try to find partners who are better at it than we are. And let's just focus our company on what we're good at our core, and just to keep on making sure we're doing that really well. Everything else, get people to help us.
So how did so you have the one product, the mushroom kit. It's going gangbusters. Whole Foods loves it. You're using up coffee grounds, creating great partners. Tell me about the Aquafarm and the birth of the Aquafarm. How did that come about?
Yeah, you know, it's a funny story. We went deeper and deeper going into urban farming and mushroom farming. We had this huge mushroom farm. And as we kind of grew that farm and we learned more about different, you know, ways of farming, we came across aquaponics, this really cool, innovative way of farming where you combine raising fish and growing food, and had a chance to visit this huge aquaponics farm in Milwaukee where this guy Will Allen, size of like a city block, a massive warehouse, had thousands of tilapia in these beds, water beds, and all that fish waste from the tilapia was being pumped up to fertilize these plants. And the plants in turn, you know, the veggies and the herbs were filtering the water and dropping back down clean water for the fish. This really cool closed-loop ecosystem where the fish were feeding the plants, and the plants are cleaning the water. And we were just blown away. Like, it's one of the coolest ways of growing food, you know, what we've seen. And started asking around, hey, are there any home-sized versions of this out there for the kitchen or the classroom? And kind of realized there wasn't. And we started putting... And I started getting us curious and excited, and like, how can we take our energy and curiosity for aquaponics that we have after visiting that farm and bring that to a lot more people? And that led us to shrinking it down into what is today our second product. It's the Water Garden. It's a 3-gallon fish tank that's perfect for your betta fish or any kind of small pet fish, and all your fish waste, you know, fertilizes the herbs, and the herbs clean the water. So it's a little self-cleaning fish tank that grows food.
And I watched a funny clip on one of the interviews you did about, you know, just taking the fish poop and making it into clean poop. And it was a very, very funny interview. It was something that people have to remember. And on the big scale of aquaponics, I mean, I live in Tucson. I interview people from all over the country, all over the world. And it's huge because it'll help with food scarcity. It helps, you know, with food waste. So it's really unbelievable. But then I want to ask you about how did you go from this is really cool. Did you have your own little R&D department that came up with the whole design and ready to go to market?
For
how did you
the,
get from for the Aquafarm? How did you get from we love this idea to now we're going to be, that's going to be our second product?
Well, you know, we started testing it out first with out of passion and curiosity, some really bulky, just tough, you know, big plastic bins from Target that we bought and, you know, just try to hack it together. And then we started growing it and we're like, whoa, so that's really cool. We can do it on a small scale. And started, you know, refining it and keep on testing it out. And we're like, this is really cool. We're growing, you know, in a few square feet, we're growing tons of food here. And, but, you know, we had learned our lesson from the mushroom kit where we kind of, we told them, hey, if we're going to launch this product, we're not going to make the same mistake we did last time. You know, like we learned the power of design. Let's make sure we do it right from the start. So we found a really cool industrial design group based here in San Francisco, just some amazing industrial designers and you know, just mechanical engineers. And we got together with them and brought aquaponics experts and designers together and just set out to create, you know, the first home aquaponics kit and said, hey, let's bring together functionality, design and fun and, you know, it was a 6-month project to design it and bring it to life. But, ended up, you know, we had our first prototype and still didn't really know if we were going to have demand from people for it. But, that's going to let us to actually launch it on Kickstarter, the crowdfunding site. And we had a $100,000 goal on Kickstarter to see if we could get this thing funded because we didn't have the capital to launch it. And, ended up hitting almost $250,000 in 30 days. Of pre-order, which is just incredible. So it was just a, you know, a really exciting launch and gave us a lot of momentum to run with.
I just don't think there's anything out there that's better than Kickstarter. I mean, I've written so many business plans and gotten venture capital and on and on and on. And we did a much smaller Kickstarter because we wanted to, you know, fund a series on food. But I read about your Kickstarter. And it's the power of social media. It's the power of engaging your tribe. And it was, you know, did you sit there and watch the numbers go up on that and have some really fun celebrations for your Kickstarter success?
It was definitely a lot of fun. But we weren't sitting around and watching the numbers. That's probably the most intense 1 month of our one of the most intense 1 month because you have this short deadline to maximize, you know, opportunity. And it was just the most one of the most intense 1 month, but it was so much fun at the same time because we were starting to see the reaction. It's just, I mean, that makes it fun right there, you know. And I think if we hadn't hit our goal, it would be one of the most miserable 30 days, but I think the fact that we were just getting so much excitement and energy, it made you want to just stay up all night and keep on working and getting back to people and, you know, sharing it. So.
For anybody who's done one, you can feel that thrill. And I just really, we're going to make sure that we, you know, reached our goal. And we didn't have a product to sell. It was a concept of, you know, a series on what am I eating and why should I care? But I hear you. We were watching every night and calling friends and asking them to share it. So let's talk about, well, we have to take a break in 2 minutes, but let's talk a little bit about, if you don't mind sharing, you had to have come across some obstacles. What were some of the, like, the biggest challenges? And did you ever pull your hair out and say, let's throw it in? Or what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome? There's my question.
Yeah, you know, we've, every day there's challenges. Like, you know, it's, I was kind of saying it's entrepreneurship is about, you know, more things are always going wrong than they're going right. It's how you respond to those that makes you successful or not, you know, and, early on, it's just so recently, you know, we figured out how to grow mushrooms. We weren't very good at it, to be frank. You know, we weren't the best mushroom farmers. And, you know, we were losing thousands and thousands of chicks because of contamination and overheating and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, I think eventually we were fortunate enough that the guys who were mentoring us, this mushroom farm in the Northern California Sebastopol area, you know, one of the first guys 30 years ago to go
especially much in North America. And they finally said, hey, you guys might have enough volume now for us to try growing these for you. And it's one of the most, you know, just amazing partnerships about it since we developed it about a year ago, where we moved all of our production up to their farm, and it's just been incredible for the consistency and the quality and the yield of the mushrooms. But, you know, that's an example where we weren't doing very well, and, you know, it got us through our first year. You know, we were planting thousands of pounds of coffee grounds a day, and literally nothing would grow. It was just all we would see is this contamination and mold. I think what got us through is just our partnership, you know, early on.
Part of the untold story. Okay, we're going to have to take another quick break, and time is flying because we're having fun. Everybody stay here with me for the final piece of Back to the Roots with Nikhil Arora.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World, next.
Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI Clean Diesel Technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI Clean Diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
The Habit Store is a big operation with staff and volunteers working hard to reduce our carbon footprint. We sell donated building materials, furniture and appliances, and recycle the metal from items that we can't repair or sell. We even have solar panels on the roof. The good deals we offer shoppers means Tucson Habitat can build and renovate homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store's store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturdays, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we're certainly having the opportunity to think about an exciting, wonderful, authentic, great character company, Back to the Roots. Our guest is Nikhil Arora, co-founder of this company. Since graduating from UC Berkeley in 2009, he and his co-founder, Alex Velez, have created two award-winning products, the Mushroom Kit and Aqua Farm, that are sold in over 2,500 retailers nationwide, going and growing. Their mission is to create well-designed, fun, and sustainable products that inspire millennials and their kids to reconnect with food and ask the question, where does my food come from? And just a quick shout out about Mrs. Green's World. Remember to visit us at our website, MrsGreensWorld.com, to download our free mobile app. And our shows are available on our website and in iTunes. And follow us on your favorite social media platform. We're on Twitter like crazy, Facebook, Instagram. We've got them all covered. Okay, Al, back to, okay, Nikhil, I want to ask you this. When you're growing, one of the biggest challenges I had in growing companies was to maintain the integrity of the product. How do you grow as fast as you have and make sure that you're not compromising the quality of what it is you're selling?
No, it's not easy. I think that's probably my biggest challenge right now is how do you keep on moving quick and not make mistakes at the same time, to be frank. And, I think it's less about not making mistakes, and so I think it's more about just being open about when you do. And, you know, our first Aqua Farm version, we made a huge mistake. Our first pumps we shipped out to our Kickstarter backers were terrible, to be frank. We didn't do a good enough job of vetting them out, and they all, I'd say like two-thirds of them died within like 3-4 weeks. It was terrible. We had like, you know, thousands of customers all of a sudden have broken pumps, and that's an example. We were moving way too quick to fulfill orders and didn't take our time and proper diligence on one of our components, and it was no good. And, you know, all we could do then is be really open about the mistake we made and obviously stand behind our products. We, you know, we got
new pumps in right away and shipped them to, for free to everybody and made sure we were replacing things and communicating really well. But I think, you know, we're going to make mistakes. We know that. And I think it's more about how we react to those. And even big companies, even like Apple, you know, they're the largest company on earth with the most resources on earth. And, you know, they've launched some phones with antenna issues and bending problems and things like that. And so we know it's going to happen. We just have to be nimble. And I think it's actually transparency. Is, I don't think people expect perfection. I think they want authenticity and someone to take responsibility for it, you know.
You know, what a great answer. I mean, I love it when people on the show say, oh, Mrs. Green, that's a great question. But what a great answer, because people are going to make mistakes. And the integrity to me is, how do you deal with that? And you did. You really did. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with the world's coolest cooler on Kickstarter. They raised $23 million. Well, you can be sure I ordered a cooler, and I can't wait. I mean, they're supposed to be shipped in February, but that's another phenomenon. And the guy talked about how he was going to ensure the integrity of the product. So talk about a shipping a problem. I mean, I don't think he thought he was going to make $23 million on Kickstarter and get as many orders as he did. Okay, so what about some other obstacles? There's the quality of it. What about growing your staff? How do you, I love that you said, we don't have a legal department, we don't have this department. You leave that to outsourcing and leaving that to experts that you trust. But what are you looking for as you go forward in terms of growing your staff and making sure that they share the same corporate values that you do?
Yeah, that's number one, to be honest with you. A company isn't made, I think we've learned, by our products or our logo or our website. A company is, by definition to us, a company of people. It's a group of people. It's the people that make up everything else. They're the ones who are going to create the product, be the brand, be the communication. So we take hiring more seriously than anything else in our company. You know, it's we're a small team, but that we're a really close-knit. It's like a family here, and hiring is everything for us, and you can be the smartest person in the world. And we've had to turn down people who have just been brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people, but they just weren't the right fit from a values and culture perspective. And I think we know that, hey, if we're working all day, every day here as a team, we're spending more time together than we probably do with our family, girlfriends, wives, kids, whoever, you know, there are in your life. Probably spend more time with your colleagues than them. We better be having a good time doing what we're doing and enjoy what we're working with. So we take it really seriously.
It's really intense. And I know when I started my first company, you have to start thinking about things like personnel issues and PTO and all of that stuff. And my daughter works for a company in LA called 72 and Sunny, and they just did away with PTO. Like, people, they say, you work for us, you're there, you know, some people work 7 days a week. So there's new philosophies emerging on that, in that arena too, for big companies and small. Okay, what do you, I know this show will air, this is a pre-record, and most people know that I do the pre-records. This show will actually air on February 28th at noon Pacific time, which is 2 days after your new product launch. How exciting is that? I know you can't tell me because you'd probably have to kill me because I'm like, oh gosh, but I so want to ask you. It's only February 11th. But is there any hint you can give us? The show will not air until then. I can't help myself. Sorry, Mrs. Green.
Are you listening to this? Go. I'd recommend you go into our website at backtothereach.com because by then you will see what it is. But we are, you know, I can give a quick just kind of thoughts on where we see our Back to the Roots brand able to start evolving into it. And this next project is our first kind of entry point into it. But, you know, we see this opportunity in food where, like, look at the brands in food. The first brands were, that came out, really kind of your craft foods, right? Your early 1900s, all about food safety, where you know, you can trust us. This food wasn't made in a bathtub. You know, it could, it's not going to kill you at least right away. You know, it's safe enough. And then you had your brands in the 70s and 80s, like 70s really came out, your first natural organic brands. And that's Nature's Path, Stonyfield Farms, Earthbound Farms, they're all about, you know, organic. And I think there's this opportunity now to create this brand, food brand, that's, like, what's that food going to look like for our generation, for millennials? It's beyond organic. It's more about, like, simplicity, front-of-pack labeling, transparency. And we kind of see this opportunity in food where, like, there's this need for that next wave of brands that connects to millennials and really makes that kind of food accessible and fun. And you know, we're looking to expand our company from just ready-to-grow products to ready-to-eat products as well on the grocery shelf. So we're making some big transition as we kind of expand the funnel for what Back to the Roots can tap into. And it's really becoming this brand that if you think about connecting to your food, whether you're growing it or eating it, we want Back to the Roots to be that brand.
Hey, you know what? When I was doing the research, I am so not kidding. I have interviewed Myra Goodman a couple of times from Earthbound Farm and Gary Hirschberg from Stonyfield. And when I was doing research for the show, it was like, this is how they started. I remember Gary telling me about they were just a bunch of hippies on this tiny little farm. And I'm like, baby, look at you now. And Myra Goodman, she and her husband were literally growing lettuce in their backyard and packaging it in baggies. And I'm sure you know the story, selling it to people, to restaurants in Carmel. And again, baby, look at them now. They sold the company, I think, last December for like $113 million, but they're still involved. They're still committed to a healthy planet, healthy food. It was never about the money. It was about their passion, and the money was good. The money was good. It's not like that was bad, but it was building a culture of that you could have confidence in. That's how I feel, you know, and I was thinking these guys are the next Earthbound Farm and Stonyfield Farm. So that's, I'm glad that you brought them up. What do you see?
They've been talking about inspirations, by the way. Those companies just so much respect. And for the, you know, our company is built off of the foundation that they created and the awareness they built and still are creating. So just so much love and respect for those individuals and what they've built.
And I remember talking to Myra, and she said that they had to, you know, because they make their containers out of recycled plastic. And because California doesn't use a lot of plastic, they had a problem with supply. So they actually built their own recycling plant right on their property. And, you know, the problems kept coming up, and then they kept coming up with solutions. So they're just a great example. And Gary, you know, he and I talked about why big is not bad. You know, he got criticized when they went into Walmart. Well, you have to make healthy yogurt available to people in Walmart at affordable prices as well. So that was a good thing for me to hear from him about how they go forward. So where do you see yourself? This is really hard to ask of someone that is really so young. Where do you guys have any vision for where you might even be 5 years from now? Will you just keep going on the journey and developing good products and bringing good things to market?
That's the plan, honestly. It's 5 years ago. It seems like a lifetime. I mean, 5 years ago, we were in college in a classroom and thought I was going to be a consultant, you know, so I can only imagine what the next 5 years are going to bring, but it's I know that what we're working on in terms of undoing food is what we're so passionate about. And I hope in 5 years from now, this brand is just touching countless more people and hope, you know, I want to create a brand that lasts. We want to create a brand that, you know, that our kids' kids are proud about and that's not going to come and go. That's going to make a really tangible shift in how we view food, especially this next generation, how we think about food. And I hope that we look back, you know, 30 years from now and look back and then hopefully the work we're doing now makes a big shift in the food system. And I think it just takes a couple brands to start changing the way it's done. You know, talk about putting percentages of the ingredients in your packaging, front of pack ingredient labeling, small things that aren't hard to do, but just takes people to do it. You know, and I think that a few brands doing it can make a huge difference. And that's what we believe in, and what drives us, because we know
you know, these few years of work and hopefully make a long impact. So I hope 5 years from now we still have a community around us, having fun doing what we're doing, and you know, proud of it too.
You'll be 40 under 40 instead of 30 under 30. It'll be a great thing. So before, we have 1 minute left, and to me the time flew. I hope it did for you. That's right. We started at 20 after. So I have time for this question. You target the millennials and you say the millennials. What is your idea of the profile of what a millennial is? Because it's used a lot. So in your mind, when you say that is definitely your demographic, what does a millennial look like? What are their actions?
Yeah, you know, in our mind, I think it's our generation. I think it's people, you know, late, you know, mid-20s to that kind of mid-30s right now who
right.
are that next big consumer wave. And for us, I think it's a group, you know, we're all, at least for us, I can speak, you know, we graduated in the heart of the financial crisis where banks are failing, economy's crashing. And I think we all kind of came out with this mindset of, like, there's got to be a better way to deal with them than what we just did, you know, in terms of
right.
business. And I think it's there's so much more. There's so much. I think talk about like things being ripe right now for change. Where this next generation is going to have so much influence, so much purchasing power. Where they're used to having information at their fingertips. They're used to transparency. And I think can we bring that desire for transparency and information and doing good through business? And can we bring that to food? And I think if we can bring that brand to food, we can. Get a lot of this generation excited about it, you know, and hopefully make a big shift. And as we start having kids and you know, I think it can have such a huge impact if we can tap into this generation and get them excited about food. So
there's so much at stake.
It's the right place to focus.
Yeah, there's so much at stake. When I, you know, I do shows with experts on autism and juvenile diabetes and obesity and all of those things that to me go down to the crystallized form of what are we feeding our kids? What are we eating and why should we care? So to me, there's nothing, it's where it all starts. I mean, it all starts with your food. What about small steps that you would encourage people to take? Because let's be honest, with what you're doing and your social media presence, you do have a lot of power and your values are being looked at. So what would you say to people, one or two small steps that they should start taking to move in a more sustainable and healthier direction?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest one thing I think being in business, maybe this isn't the direct answer to your question, but it's maybe from my mind went to, it's being, I think, as a business owner, really understanding the power consumers have
yes.
to make a difference. Like it
yes.
is incredible, the power of your dollar, everything
yes.
you spend, and the change, like every single person can make such a huge impact just through your everyday actions. And good food does not have to be more expensive, you know, and there's such a fallacy about that. And I just really, really kind of hope to get people thinking about like that $1 you're going to spend, you know, even if it's just buying organic, like the amount of pesticides it takes out of our environment, how it affects farmers, how it affects the environment, how it affects our kids, you know, that same dollar can have so many different effects depending on who you give that to. And just, I won't say what's right or wrong, but just hope people just think about the power they have really to make change is based on their everyday purchasing decision.
It's everything. I mean, it is, to me, that is the best answer you possibly could have given, because you just have to think about where you're spending your money. And I don't really like it when people say, I can't afford to eat organic, and they have a latte in their hand. I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many pounds of kale you could have bought for that latte at the farmer's market?
Exactly.
It's really, and it's yeah. it's not really being judgmental, but it's about getting people to stop and think, and you have a budget, where are you putting your money? And if you're spending, you know, $5 or $6 a day on a really super duper latte, caramel macchiato, whatever it is, you are making a choice and telling your body and everything else what to eat. So anyway, this has been absolutely and positively delightful. And I am not a millennial, but I have three millennials in my and my family and my grandchildren. They're great teachers for me. And we that are not the millennials are learning from your generation and getting away from so many of the bad habits that we grew up with, even with great parents who were, you know, doing what they thought was the right thing. So thank you so much for doing what you're doing. Tell Alex the same thing. Next week, everybody, John Farrell, Director of Democratic Energy from the esteemed Institute for Local Self-Reliance, the gold standard for building community and strengthening economies. Everybody make it a great green week. Nikhil, good luck. You are doing great stuff.